almost didn't come tonight. I saw something on the internet that said this was a cult, so I wasn't going to come. It's like they've got me for 20, almost 25 years now. But I am an alcoholic. I enjoyed, thank you, Paul. Congratulations to everybody who had anniversaries. I was, Paul, I don't know why his story, he had me thinking of a bunch of stuff. I guess it started with the wine, the Mad Dog. I like Mad Dog. First time I asked some older kids to buy, I just remember the guy's face. He goes, "What do you want?" I said, "I want that MD-2020. And he goes, "Are you sure you want that?" I go, "Yeah." Because, you know, I was in there researching, you know, in the back of the convenience store, and it had 20% alcohol, and it was $2 and something and some change, and it sounded like the best deal. But, you know, I started drinking at 14. I went to my first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting when I was 18. And I was not happy to be there. I mean, it was like a bad after-school special. You know what I mean? I mean, I was just getting warmed up, I thought. You know what I mean? I was like, man, as soon as I'm old enough, this isn't going to be such a pain. But, you know, that a lot of people, you know, I did not come here because I thought it was a good idea. There was a lot of, you know, police and teachers and, you know, I got a lot of paperwork that said the state of Ohio versus William Weber. A lot of stuff like that. My first drink was Carlo Rossi wine. I started out classy. It was $6. I remember the price tag. It was $6 a gallon then when I was 14. It's $8 now. I checked the other day at Publix. I still got it. You know, if I walk too slow in the aisle, I hear music, like sirens, you know, singing. I hear, ah! But, you know, I can't really look at it very long because I still got it, obviously, man. I mean, you know, it's wild. But, you know, I know, the cast, you got me thinking about. There was a guy, and I feel it's my responsibility to tell you guys stuff. Everybody who knows me knows I always tell stories. And I tell stories about people that aren't here anymore because I think they need to be told. But there was a guy when I was new. And, you know, I'm lucky he didn't kill me because I totally disrespected him. This guy was a Golden Gloves boxer, like karate master, psychopath, you know what I mean? But he was sober. And my sponsor would always say to me, he'd be like, "Man, you should have seen that guy when he was new. You know, I think it's just some idiot." He's like, "Yeah, that guy, you know, kidnapped somebody and beat him for like 24 hours, you know, one night." And the reason he didn't get the ransom through is he was too shy to talk on the phone, so he had to just let the guy go. But, Danny, we were at a meeting, and he had these shorts on, and he was, and some guy was like, "Yeah, normal guy," and he showed me this scar. He had this huge scar on his leg, and what had happened is Danny had a cast on, and he was drunk and decided he was sick of wearing it, so he took a circular saw, and he cut it off, severed his artery there. He was Jewish. They took him to a Catholic hospital. He refused treatment, almost bled to death, and I just, you know, that's the kind of stuff I just dug AA, man. It was interesting, you know what I mean? I mean, there was cats I could see hanging out with, but anyway, you know, another good Danny line is, if you love everybody in AA, you're not going to enough different meetings, you know, you need to spread out a little more, but Danny was a good guy, but you know, I just thought he was weird when I met him and stuff, and like I said, I made fun of him, and look, he didn't beat the hell out of me, but Danny died sober. He had a brain aneurysm, died at 42, but he was a good guy. He used to take me to detox with him. But anyway, back to the drinking. I drank. First time I drank, I just remember it tasted horrible, but I just remember smiling. You know what I mean? That's the main thing I remember. I remember smiling, and I remember just feeling happy. You know what I mean? And just feeling, like, loose. All my life, I was just so uptight, so nervous, so freaked out. I was just a total little worrisome kid. My mom used to be like, "You know, you need to chill out. Like, she'd be like, you need to quit worrying." I mean, anything I'd see on TV was going to happen to me. You know, I guess a little self-centered there, but I mean, anything I'd see, I knew it was going to happen to me. Like, if there's a thing about a fire, I was like, our house is going to burn down. If I saw some movie where a jet plane hit a house, I couldn't sleep. I'd be like, great, jet's going to hit our house. We're going to die. You know, and I still have that brain, but it's chilled out a lot. But I mean, any kind of disease, you know, I'd see on TV. I remember being like 9, being like, "I know I got cancer, you know, I saw on TV, you know, and I'm just gonna die," and I'd be totally freaked out about it. And never could ask a question, really, you know, always worried about looking dumb. You know, weird stuff, like I remember we lived on a farm, there's an electric fence, you know, and you hear electric can kill you, so I get shocked by the fence, and I think I'm going to die, like, later, you know what I mean? So I'm just, like, walking around, like, man, I can't tell my parents, because they'll kill me, you know, so I'm not supposed to touch the electric fence, but I know I'm going to die, you know, and just I don't know, man. Drinking was the best thing that ever happened to me because it took a lot of that away. You know what I mean? I kind of relaxed and actually, like, laughed and thought that, you know, life was going to get better. And from the first time I got that buzz, I just remember thinking, like, this is it. This is it. This is my niche, you know. I'm not good at sports. I'm not good at school. This is it. This is what I'm going to be good at. And I don't know why I ever thought that. I blacked out, like, the second time I drank. I always wet my pants. I always blacked out. I always just made a complete scene. And it was, you know, it's funny, like, the first time, and that's it. And then it's just, you know what I mean? You hang out with people, if you're like me, once. You know what I mean? Once or twice. And some people just are sadistic, and they like to hang out with you. But, you know, and it was just embarrassing. I mean, and the you know, like I said, the blackouts, and I'm glad I got sober where I did in Cincinnati. It was all speaker meetings, and it just horrified me. I remember sitting in the audience, and these people, the stuff they would talk about, I'd just be looking around like, I cannot believe this guy is telling this stuff. It's like, doesn't, you know, didn't their parents tell them? Like, you do not tell people these kind of personal things about yourself, you know? And the first speaker I heard was a guy named, his name was Bill S. Bill had been sober, what was it, 30 years? 30 years in 1984. Four, I guess, and it was like, you know, to me that was like the Birdman from Alcatraz. It was just like, oh my God, 30 years in the AA, like, you know, it's like, just put him in the dungeon and beat him, you know. I mean, it just sounded horrible, you know what I mean, to be in AA that long, just horrible. But Bill talked about riding streetcars in Cincinnati and having the DTs and hallucinations and mental hospitals and shock treatments, and you know, I'm just like, Jesus, you know what I mean? I'm 18, you know, I'm just stupid. I mean, I'm just here to beat a DUI. I'm not an alcoholic. You know, because I knew the reason I got my DUIs, the first one I got, because I took the wrong road home. Everybody's pretty much heard this, but it was all over a beef and cheddar. You know, if I wouldn't have stopped at Arby's, I wouldn't have been pulling out of Arby's. I wouldn't have cut off the state boy. It would have never happened. So I didn't have Arby's till I think last year I had some, but it's like 20 years. You know what I mean? I knew it. And I mean, and that's the way my brain works. So I don't know how you're going to help me. I'm hitchhiking, talking to myself. You know, like, only wouldn't get that beef and cheddar. You'd be in a car with heat right now. Instead, you're thumbing, dumbass. You know, and that's the way I would just talk to myself all day long, you know. Had to get that beef and cheddar, you know. And the real reason I got a DUI is I was drinking Colt, eating pills, smoking pot, you know, and I was drunk, you know. And apparently there's no law against eating beef and cheddars and driving. But anyway, you know, the other one I would think is I could have taken a different route and it wouldn't have happened. You know, it's like, well, that road's crawling with state boys. You're an idiot, you know. And the second one I got, my old man, I just turned 18, and I mean, he just, this whole thing, I mean, he was so trying to help me, so desperate, and he was like, look, he goes, just don't drink and drive. He goes, if you do get drunk, call me. He said, I won't bitch at you, I won't yell at you, I just don't want to see you get a DUI. I was almost crying. I was like, I love you, Dad, you know, because I live with my mom, and my mom was just horrified. She's like, he has no business driving. My mom was like in touch with reality. You know, she lived with me. I scared the hell out of her on a regular basis. She'd find me in the front yard napping in August, you know. She'd find me, you know what I mean? She'd go to get me up for school. I've been doing acid all night. I'd spin around the chair, my eyes bugged out. I'd be like, I'm already up, Mom, you know, you know, every day. And she would tell my dad this stuff, and I'd be like, Dad, she's just a drama queen. I mean, it's like, she's always all excited about, you know, me being, you know, wasted all the time, you know. I mean, I'd smoke dope in a house, stink the whole house up, you know. She'd come home and confront me about it, you know. And I'd be like, it's incense. What kind of people are you hanging out with at that restaurant that you would even know what marijuana smells like, you know? I mean, my eyes totally bloodshot, you know. I'd let anybody live there. You could be wanted by the FBI, whatever, if you had stuff I want it. You know, I didn't ask my mom. I just be like, yeah, you can crash here, dude. You know, and then the minute you ran out of stuff, I'd be like, hey, my mom said you can't stay here, you know. And that's the kind of buddy I was. But kind of bouncing around. But that night my dad told me that. I'm like, and I remember just I always think of Bill's story where he talks about, you know, I forget what he says, like the cocksureness or whatever. I just thought I had no problems now. It's like I can't get a DUI because my whole problem is this mother against drunk driving crap. You know, they're out busting us kids, you know. I never got pulled over for weaving. I always, you know, almost caused an accident, flip my car, something like that. So that night I go out, I'm telling all my buddies, I'm like, I cannot get a DUI. This is awesome. My dad's totally cool. I just call him, he'll play taxi, you know. I got a DUI that night. Had another guy with me who wasn't drinking who begged me to drive before the wreck. And, you know, and I was like, no way, dude, I'm driving the Stang. And I flipped the car, and it was a bad scene. And the funniest thing about it was... my mom told me later, and I wish I could get my mom to tell my story someday. You guys would die. Because she was sober. She knows what really happened. A lot of this is, you know, hearsay. But anyway, apparently my first DUI, there was a guy in the station. He's like, put a penny under your tongue. You know, he's like, put a penny or you'll beat the breathalyzer. Anyway, he wasn't there. But apparently my mom got there. I had a bunch of change in my mouth before the cops got there. And she said, you could hear it. I was like, don't worry, Mom. I got it beat. You know, and she was like, my son is an idiot, you know. And, so yeah, I got a two, blew a two, something like that. But I just remember, you know, the whole trying to beat the DUI. You know, you got to blow hard enough for your eyeballs to pop out, and you're thinking, I'll just blow softly. You know, it's like so pathetic. But went to treatment, exposed to that AA, you know, and that guy. And the only thing I liked about his talk is two things. One, he said the only hopeless case was 24 empty bottles. I thought that was kind of cute. And he said that in the 50s, Vicks inhalers had Benzedrine in them. And you could crack them open and eat the Benzedrine in speed. And I could see a Walgreens from my room. So hence, I have a question for AA. It's like, do they still put the Benzedrine in it? No kid, they don't. And that's what AA was for me. Like, I was like, these people know stuff. You know what I mean? I would go to meetings with new knowledge for when I went back to drinking. And I don't know, they kind of won me over, you know, after a while. And I smoked weed while I was in the place, but there were young people that would come in, I remember, and they were sober, and it was kind of weird. But, you know, it was like, okay, you know, that might be kind of cool. And then I was kind of like, well, I just love how brilliant I thought I was. I was like, I'm a drug addict, you know, it sounds a lot cooler. Alcoholics, kind of dirty, loser, weak-willed addict. I thought that was classy, I guess. I don't know why, but, you know, it sounded a lot cooler, so I was an addict, you know. But I knew, like, but I can't drink. Drinking is when I always get arrested. Drinking is when I black out. Drinking is when I piss myself. You know, drinking is when I try to kill my friends and the people I love for no reason, you know. I did a lot of crazy stuff. I was the kind of guy, if I'm in the passenger seat, all of a sudden I just grab the wheel and run us off the road, you know, and laugh until you throw me out of the car. And then I'm like, you know, why are you throwing me out of the car? You know what I mean? You know, and I don't get it, you know. Back in the 80s, some of you remember, they wore the bandanas around their neck. I'd be in the back seat, and I'd just start choking the shit out of you. You know what I mean? And I'm meaning to be, like, playing, but I'm not playing, you know. I'm wasted, and I'm about killing you. And then when you punch me in the face, I'm like, why'd you punch me in the face, you know? And there was a lot of that. But So I got that DUI, went through there, heard my sponsor speak, got out, and I was like, you know what? I got this little bit of weed at home. I'm going to smoke it, and then I'm going to get sober. You know what I mean? I always want that last hurrah, and I think this happens to a lot of people. At least it did for me. I didn't get this whole thing. You know, I hated AA and the whole, it's the first drink to get you drunk. You know, and this whole complete abstinence I thought was kind of radical. You know what I mean? I was like, I just need to drink, like, a six-pack. You know, if I could just drink a six-pack, it'll be cool. But, you know, I could never control my drinking. I always drank like a pig. I was always obsessed with alcohol. I was always the guy getting my hand smacked. You know, that was embarrassing in front of people. Like, I'd slam the first one. I'd go for the next one. These guys would be like, chill out. You know what I mean? We're going to be babysitting you later, and we're not in the mood for it, Weber. You know what I mean? It would be like, damn, man, you guys are kind of harsh about me. Just let me drink, get it in me. You know what I mean? Let me get some relief. You know, and I always wanted to drink more than my share. And anyway, I started drinking, and I couldn't stop. And my mom, this is another one she was reminding me the other day. It was like in treatment back then, they used to say, well, relapse is a part of the disease. So she told me, I was like, yeah, Mom, relapse is part of the disease. Like, you know, like I'm getting my relapse like there were snow days or something. You know, like, I'm definitely going to be relapsing. You know what I mean? I hear you can do it. I get a few. And I'm lucky to be here today. But anyway, I got out, and I was just going to smoke pot. That lasted no time at all, because when I smoke pot, my mouth gets dry, get thirsty, get a little paranoid. And I thought, well, I'll just drink one king can of beer. The king cans had just come out, and I thought that was amazing, you know, and a 32-ounce can. So I don't know. I didn't think I was an alcoholic, but what ended up happening is I'm holding these beers in the store, and I'm in line, and I'm like, I'm an alcoholic, I can't drink, but I'm just going to drink one, I'll just drink two. And I'd put them back, and then I'd get out my car, and I'd start to start my car, and then I'd go and get them out again. I did this like 8 times. I don't know why they didn't call the police. Finally, I went to my buddy who's laughing at me, because I keep going in to get the beer, and I don't come out with it, and I go in to get it, and I come out with it. I go, look, I'll give you the money, you go buy it, and then I'll drink it. Then it won't be a relapse. And he just started laughing. He went and got it, and I was drunk. My mom was the one who freaked me out. My mom caught me, and she was just, like, crying. I remember, because a couple kids in my rehab had died. Just, you know, one overdose, another one drowned drunk. And I just remember being drunk trying to comfort my mother. It was about pathetic. She's bawling. And she's like, you're going to die. I'm going to watch you die like those other kids. And I'm like, no, Mom, it's going to be cool. I'm going to go back to AA tomorrow. Just a little drunk tonight. It'll be cool. I'll go to AA tomorrow. I didn't go to AA tomorrow. I couldn't stop. I thought I was cool because I didn't have a license, but I got a robbery charge, so that was new. You know, and I remember thinking, like, I don't rob people. I'll be cool. I don't have a license. I got a robbery charge. And all of a sudden, I was an alcoholic again. That's pretty much how it worked for me. It was legal stuff that made me think, you know, and I still don't think I thought I was an alcoholic. You know what I mean? I just thought, this is my angle. This is the only angle I got, you know. I went in there again, but the difference this time was I still didn't believe I was an alcoholic, still didn't believe I had a disease. I thought that God was punishing me. He knew the only thing that I cared about was drinking, so this was my punishment. So go to AA forever. So I started going to AA. I heard this guy speak, and when the guy spoke, it just hit me, man. I think it happens to most people when you pick your sponsor. At least for me, I knew this was the guy. I knew he was the guy, and he was just crazy, you know. And he talked about the one that really hooked me. He talked about driving to work when he didn't have a job in rush hour traffic on LSD, so he felt like he was part of life. and I thought, that's my guy, you know. And he's still my sponsor today. I've had the same sponsor, you know, for over 24 years now. Oh my God, it's just, I'm just so lucky, you know. It's been such a great thing for both of us. But got this guy as a sponsor, and I remember the first time I called him, I was in the hospital, and he was working 5 a.m. And I was like, yeah, it's Bill from the hospital. He goes, yeah, Bill, aren't you in that treatment center? I go, yeah. He goes, well, I got to get up at 5. He goes, can't you talk to a counselor or something? I got to go to bed. And I was like, oh, like somebody punched me in the stomach, you know, because I was going to fire him right then. But for some reason, I kept him. But it was just weird, just stuff. Then it was like I was going to get him to go to court, you know. I was like, I get this guy to go to court with me so I don't go to prison. He goes, yeah, Bill, don't worry. He goes, they got a lot of prison in AA, or AA in prison. Once you get up to the penitentiary, you'll be able to go to AA meetings up there. I was like, what a bastard, you know. I'm going to report this guy to somebody. But you know, I don't know. It's like he was like, you know, if you want to get sober, I'll help you, but you're not going to hustle me for nothing else. You know what I mean? And I just respected him, you know. I mean, it was wild. But the other thing was all he talked about was the freaking Big Book, which was horrible. You know, because I just wanted, like, some therapy. I thought there's got to be some kind of pills that'll help me sleep. Because I was blessed with insomnia. I did not sleep my first year of sobriety. I thought I was going to lose my mind. I would be up all night. There was no cable. The TV finally went, they do the Star Spangled Banner or whatever, or the anthem, whatever it is. But I would call my sponsor. Now, if I had cable, I wouldn't have called my sponsor. If I had MTV, man, I would have just watched that all night. You know what I mean? But I had nothing else to do. I had to call this guy in AA, you know. And I'd smoke like 2 packs of Marlboros and pace around my house and be like, God, why don't you just be a man and go to prison? You know, but I still had a pending court case or whatever. But anyway, I started calling this guy, and he would just talk about, oh, have you read the doctor's opinion? Like, it was so groovy or something. Have you read Bill's story? You know, have you read the doctor's opinion? And he's like, oh, Jesus. You know, and I don't know. I would talk to this guy, and I would fall asleep. So I started using this guy as a Valium. I don't know what he was talking about. But I was like, I call a sponsor, I get tired, and I can sleep, thank God. Because sleep was like the only relief I had from life, you know. The rest of my life was just painful. The whole time was like wearing a real small shirt or something that was choking, you know. And I'm serious, it was, man. Anyway, I would call this guy, and finally, I don't know, I just kind of got mad, you know, and I was like, look, I'm going to do all the stupid stuff that you say to do, and when it doesn't work, I can drink with a clear conscience, you know, and just, I'll just get really drunk, okay, and, you know, just go out, blot it out to the bitter end, like they say, you know, and I don't know, man, like the inventory. Like, I was like, well, I don't think I'm ready for them. When should I do it? And he was like, well, when do you want to feel better? He's all that stuff that bothers you. Why don't you try writing it down? So I wrote it down, man. And I mean, I just, my experience, just write fast. That's what I did. Because I'd read it, man. I'd be like, damn, it just looks bad, man. You know, I'd write it down. I'd, like, you know, I'd try to, like, you know, pretty it up. But there's only so much you can do with the kind of stuff that bothered me, the stuff that kept me awake, you know. Because, like, I would be doing good. I'd work a couple days of temp labor. I'd be smiling or something. I'd see myself in a mirror, and I'd think, don't you even smile, you rotten son of a bitch. You know what you did to your mother. You know what you said to those people. You know you stole that money. You know, all this stuff. And I told him everything. You know, even stuff like, and the way I hated people, or like I'd frame people in my family for doing stuff that I did, you know, I was terrible. And I wrote it all down. I met him at this AA club, and it was so funny. He was late. And I was there, and I was geeking. I was sitting on my inventory. I'm watching people because I thought somebody was going to grab it and read it or something. You know what I mean? I was like, I will kill somebody, you know. And I had my camo on. I had my big hair. And this girl came up to me. She goes, what is wrong with you? I said, I don't know. I'm supposed to do my fourth step and fifth step, but I think it's a sign from God. My sponsor ain't here. I'm not ready. I'm going to get out here. She goes, no, you should wait. You should do it. It'll help you. And he showed up. We went up there and did it. And I don't know. When it was done, I thought I was going to shock him or something. He's just like, you're just an alcoholic. And there was a mental hospital down the street. And I was just sure he's going to go like, look, A, you know, you need the mental place down there. And he was like, you're just an alcoholic. And I don't know, it blew my mind. And I felt part of AA. I felt like I finally took some action, because that's what he was all on, action. That was his other thing. He goes, you don't need to understand this, because I was all, I want to understand it all and then I'll do it. And I'm the type, I'll think about something for 10 years before I do anything, you know. And he was like, just do it. So we did it, and it just got me in action. I started speaking almost immediately in mental hospitals and detoxes and jails. And jail was the real weird thing. I was like, why do you want to go to jail? You know, I was like, I'm coming here to stay out of jail. And like, he just always wanted to go to jail. You know, it was just awesome. We go to the state penitentiary, and, you know, it's been a big part of my sobriety ever since. I still go to jail. And I just, you know, I think it's important to visit us in our natural habitat. This is not our natural habitat. Everything's pretty quiet. I think everybody's got dry pants in here. You know, nobody's yelling over anybody else. I like going there. You know, I like going to detox I swear, there's been times in my life where I've been out of my mind. You know where I fall asleep? In jail. And detox, I'll be somewhere like that, and I'll start nodding out. You know, when I'm all stressed out of it, because I feel safe. I remember getting sober there, you know. And I still talk to my sponsor today. I don't know. The biggest thing I can say is, as I said before, is action. Get into action. Get a sponsor. And just try different stuff. Find what you like. My deal has always been, always have liked going to jails and detox and stuff like that. Some people like helping put on conventions and stuff. I don't think it matters what you do. Just do something. You know, I remember making coffee somewhere and just being thrilled to death with it. I remember somewhere else where all I did was set up the ashtrays. Just feeling part of it and getting to know people, you know. It's a lot of fun. Can't think. I'm just really grateful to be sober. I'm really grateful you're all here. It's been a blast. You know, living in Florida, I thought it was the worst thing ever happened to me, but it was just God redirecting me. I've got to see so many people in here, and you know who you are, who I've gotten to see recover, and it's just been awesome. Thank you.